Good morning. I have to start with two apologies. I'm sorry, I'm not Brian King. He was unable to make it for his presentation, and I'll be presenting in his place. And the other one is, I've been doing presentations a long time, but a year ago I had to start adapting to something new, and so I may be a little fumbly with these at times. But this was Brian King's presentation. Brian is the first author. He's a scientific advisor for epidemiology in the Office on Smoking and Health at CDC. Two other individuals that worked on the presentation are Kenneth Goodman, who he and myself are at ICF International, where we provide evaluation support to contracts from the CDC Division of Community Health. And then Kim Snyder did a lot of work on this presentation. She was at ICF International. She was one of my staff members, and she's now at the Office on Smoking and Health, working as a public health advisor, as a project officer there in the program services branch. This presentation is a joint work of the Division of Community Health and the Office on Smoking Health and ICF International. And at the end, if you have any questions, I'll try best to answer them as best as I can. But Brian also, his email will be on the last slide, and he said it's fine if folks want to email him after the conference as well. So, page down, here we go. I have no financial disclosures to disclose. And the findings and conclusions in this presentation are those of the authors and do not necessarily represent the views of the CDC. So what I'll do is I'll very briefly, because Sarah provided pretty strongly the rationale for smoke-free multi-unit housing, but I'll go over that a little bit again. Some of the science behind the evidence for smoke-free multi-unit housing, and then currently what the needs are and what's being done, particularly with two initiatives at CDC around evaluating smoke-free housing, smoke-free multi-unit housing initiatives, CPPW and CTG. So the rationale, I've actually started in tobacco prevention 20 years ago. I was a fellow in the Office on Smoking and Health, and I was just thinking that if I were attending APHA that year, a presentation actually might end with this slide. We might have presented all the evidence in support of multi-unit housing without the Surgeon General's report, but some of these conclusions that obviously it causes death and disease, there is no risk-free level, and really the only way to fully protect people indoors is to eliminate smoking entirely. But this time I'm starting with that slide. So 20 years ago, there were no states that banned smoking in restaurants and bars. The movement really started at the local level. This is a slide from A&R, Americans for Non-Smokers' Rights, and this shows states as well as communities that have smoke-free legislation in place. This is not applied to multi-unit housing. This is applied to public areas, non-hospitality workplaces, restaurants, and bars. And right now, as of October, there are 1,078 communities that have ordinances. While no state would have had one 20 years ago, now there are only 14 states that don't have some form of 100% smoke-free law in the country. So it really did progress from the community level. We build up the grassroots, you build up momentum, and then the states follow suit. So I think similarly, with smoke-free multi-unit housing, it's following that same trend. So right now, there are only 10 states that ban smoking in lobby and common areas. Two states that require designated areas for smoking in lobby and common areas, and there are no states that ban smoking in private units of multi-unit housing. There are, however, 211 communities that have a local law policy that provide at least some restriction on smoking in multi-unit housing, and this could be restrictions in the private units, it could be in the common area, or it could be a nuisance provision. And a nuisance provision is when you have the right to file a complaint if smoke is getting into your unit, and then action must be taken by the operator or the officials in that community. Most of those 207 of the 211 apply to public affordable housing, and 31 apply to market rate housing. All of those 31 are in the state of California. There are 12 communities that actually apply all of those, so 12 communities that ban smoking in the private units, in indoor and outdoor common areas, as well as provide nuisance provision, and 8 of those apply to market rate housing. Again, those would be all in California. So when you think about the scope of the problem, there are 79 million Americans that live in multi-unit housing in the United States. That's a quarter of our population that live in multi-unit housing units, there are 8 states that have at least 1 million people who are potentially exposed to secondhand smoke in their homes. So the science that establishes basically the core rationale for going smoke-free in multi-unit housing is going to be broken down to the 4 areas in this presentation. There's the residents, there's the economic evidence, there are the operator the data and surveys on the operators of those units, and then there's the biomarker environmental collection data. So if you look at the residents, and this is actually the only national survey of residents in smoke-free multi-unit or residents in multi-unit housing units, the a large majority of them report that they live in smoke-free homes. In other words, that there's no smoking within their unit, within their abode and where they live, especially among non-smokers. And about a third of non-smokers also report living in smoke-free buildings. And yet, of those that live in those buildings, there still is secondhand smoke incursion. And that means they can smell or experience tobacco smoke in their unit, even though it's smoke-free. Most of those individuals, especially most of the non-smokers, would favor smoke-free buildings if they had that choice. So this is data on a study that Brian King did, where if you see up there in the upper right-hand corner, that would be a layout of an apartment unit or apartment complex. And the 2 units on the bottom, the one on the left would be a smoking unit. Unit 9, unit 24 would be a non-smoking unit. And he placed particulate matter monitors in both of those units, as well as the hallway above and the patio that's outside of those units. Within the smoking unit, a cigarette was lit at 2 points in time. You can see the lit cigarettes on the chart. And you can see the red line, or the higher line, is the particulate matter measures within the smoking unit. So obviously, after the cigarette was lit, you see a drastic rise in the particulate matter in that unit, and then it drops off. Now, if you look down below, the green line, or the next line that has bumps, is the adjacent unit. So there's a little bit of a lag time, but there was also an increase in measuring particulate matter in the adjacent unit. And we know that that smoke was going through the walls of the apartment. And the reason we know is because the monitors that were in the patio and the hallway are the bottom 2 lines, which are relatively flat. So there was no really measurable particulate matter outside of those units. It was going from one unit directly to the next. This was done, when he did this study, he did it in 2 pairs of units, and it has been replicated by other authors. So this is just really to convey the scope of the economic cost. If, for instance, we were to go nationwide smoke-free and multi-unit housing, just the savings in subsidized public housing alone, subsidized housing alone, would be over $500 million a year, and just in public housing, $154 million a year. It's a huge number of residents in this country. And you have to think also about the vulnerability of the people who live in those units. Those are very high proportions, the elderly, children, and individuals with disabilities. So with the operators, this is another study that Brian conducted, where they surveyed operators of multi-unit housing, and they asked them about their interest in adopting smoke-free policies, as well as their concerns, any concerns they might have about going forward, some of those that Sarah mentioned in her presentation. And then they took the results of those survey, shared it with the intervention group, along with some other facts and information about smoke-free multi-unit housing, to those owners and operators, and a year later then resurveyed them. And they found that simply by sharing this information, sharing these information packets, that their interest in adopting smoke-free policies went up, their concerns went down, and compared to a control group where there was actually a slight increase, a very slight increase, not even significant in interest, but a significant increase in their concerns around smoke-free housing. So simple education actually made a difference in this case. This also, the data isn't up here, but they found that the interest is even greater among those operators of HUD housing. Now, back in April of this year, we conducted a workshop that was specifically to bring together folks that are working on the community transformation grants around smoke-free multi-unit housing to share experiences and strategies around data collection and evaluation with respect to their smoke-free multi-unit housing interventions. And we developed this logic model specifically for that workshop. And what I've demonstrated so far is really we've got a lot of evidence for the left side of this logic model, so we know why we should be doing it. We actually are able to see some improvements and some changes in knowledge and attitudes and support. And what we now need to do is increase the evidence for the impact and the effectiveness of these strategies to actually reduce exposure to secondhand smoke, to actually have an impact on tobacco use, and ultimately to impact the public health of the populations that we're targeting. So now I'll talk a little bit about two of the initiatives funded by CDC that include addressing smoke-free multi-unit housing, the Communities Putting Prevention to Work initiative, and the Community Transformation Grants. These are funded by the CPPW is initially funded by the stimulus funding, American Recovery Reinvestment Act, and both these initiatives have received funding through the Affordable Care Act Prevention and Public Health Fund. These are managed by the CDC Division of Community Health. CPPW was a two-year initiative, started in 2010. The implementation phase of that has closed down. They're now wrapping up the evaluation of that initiative. It supported 50 communities. An expected reach of that initiative was 55 million people. Community Transformation Grants is a five-year initiative, which was started in 2011. It was modeled after CPPW. It had more awardees, supposed to be a longer period of time, with greater reach up to 120 million people. It included tobacco-free living. It also included a couple of other extra areas, which would be include clinical and community preventive services, specifically for hypertension and cholesterol control. With CPPW, 22 of those communities were addressing tobacco use, 12 of those 22 addressing specifically smoke-free multi-unit housing. The interventions included smoke-free multi-unit housing as well as other tobacco control interventions. And of the 12 that are evaluating smoke-free multi-unit housing, they are using performance monitoring. They are interviewing staff and community leaders, owner-operator interviews, resident surveys. They are conducting they have conducted air quality monitoring and cotinine sampling. The results of those have not. They, as I said, were in the midst of wrapping up evaluation. Some have developed papers they're submitting for publication. We don't have any that are published quite yet to share, but monitor your journals for that information. With CTG being a larger initiative over a longer period of time, they're able to do more targeting with those initiatives, so targeting subpopulations that are experiencing health disparities, such as low socioeconomic status, immigrant, non-immigrant populations, the underinsured or uninsured. Various settings specifically for smoke-free multi-unit housing include the subsidized low-income housing, as well as nine of those awardees working on market-rate private housing. And the evaluations that they're using, there are 17 awardees through CTG that are evaluating their smoke-free multi-unit housing initiatives, and that includes, again, similarly to the CPPW, observations, interviews, surveys, and one of them is doing a biological mechanical collection. The workshop that we conducted last April, we had 16 of those awardees participated. We developed the logic model that I shared earlier, and we also were able to compare data collection methods as well as analysis plans, and 13 of the communities that attended have now agreed to use the multi-unit housing resident survey that has been developed for CTG. And by having 13 communities utilize the survey, this is going to greatly help us with standardizing and comparing results so that we can help strengthen the evidence base specifically around resident issues with smoke-free multi-unit housing. So now I get to present different conclusions that I would have 20 years ago. But there is obviously the scientific basis for doing this is still in place, but we do need more information to build a strong evidence base. So specifically further areas for evaluation and research, would be on key indicators such as secondhand smoke exposure, actual tobacco use. The disparities, health effects are particularly important to look at, and initiatives such as CPBW and CTG are helpful to facilitate that implementation as well as the evaluation of the smoke-free multi-unit housing initiatives. We're hoping and we do expect that the information that we gain from these initiatives and others like them will help to build an important and needed evidence base that then can be used by other communities. And again, here is the contact information. That's Brian King's email address at the top, baking@cdc.gov. He welcomes contact there for questions about this presentation. And my information is below. If you would like a copy, for instance, of the multi-unit housing resident survey, feel free to send me an email, and I can make sure that you get a copy of that. Thank you very much.